Hello, you're very welcome to Long Reads, a Jacobin podcast where we look in depth at political topics and thinkers. My name's Daniel Finn. I'm the features editor here at Jacobin, and I'll be presenting the show. Last year, Martin Empson joined us to speak about the German Peasants' War, Europe's biggest social revolt before the French Revolution. Martin joins us again for this week's episode to talk about what happened next. After the revolt was crushed, radical religious tendencies became a vehicle for social discontent. The most famous of those tendencies was known as Anabaptism. A group of religious radicals, inspired by Anabaptist ideas, even took power in the German town of Munster. After the bloody repression of the Munster rebels, the very idea of Anabaptism became a sinister bogeyman for Europe's ruling classes. Martin's book, The Time of the Harvest Has Come, Revolution, Reformation, and the German Peasants' War, will be published later this year. Martin, thanks for joining us again. The last time we were speaking, it was about the Peasants' War of 1524-25 and its aftermath. Could you talk us through the emergence in the wake of the Peasants' War of Anabaptism as a distinct religious tendency and the general picture of what became known as the Radical Reformation in countries like Germany?
So Anabaptism arises, I would argue, out of two linked processes, the Peasant War and the defeat of the Peasants' War in 1525. And associated with that, and of course linked with that, is the Reformation itself, which had begun in 1517 with Martin Luther in Wittenberg. And almost as soon as the Reformation started, all sorts of people began to discuss and debate what the Reformation meant for them personally, for their religious practice, and so on. And there was a real bubbling of radical and unique religious ideas that took place. And at the start of the Reformation, Anabaptism, as it was to become, couldn't really be distinguished from a myriad of other radical, individual, and very local interpretations of the Reformation and so on. The Peasant War, I would argue, changes that, because what the Peasant War does is it places on the political table a radical struggle for a new way of organizing society, a religious way, but one that sees local communities in Germany empowered and emboldened to discuss and organize their own religious practice and indeed their own economic lives. The Peasant War is an enormous challenge to the feudal rulers, and it is drowned in blood, as we discussed at the in the previous episode. And one of the reasons the Peasant War is completely and utterly shut down, with the loss of thousands and thousands of lives, the imprisonment of thousands of peasants, and the torturing and ending of the rebellion in the most gross ways, is because the ruling class of the Holy Roman Empire of Germany want to make sure that there's no potential for radical rebellion from below again. And this means that religion becomes really the sole outlet for radical ideas. And the various individuals who come to prominence or been involved in different parts of the Peasant War, some of them start to look to other ways to express their radicalism and radical religious ideas as well as radical economic ideas. And this crystallizes out, I would argue, best in what we know today as Anabaptism. And today we mostly know, if we think about Anabaptism, we think of it as perhaps the small religious groupings, the Amish, the Mennonites, and so on. But in the early 1520s in Germany and elsewhere in Central Europe, Anabaptism became a real movement, beginning around Zurich and spreading over the next decade or so around Central Europe. And I would argue it's a kind of continuity, if you like, continuation of the Peasant War. There's an important historian of the Anabaptist movement and the German Peasant War, who James Steyer, who describes it as being the religious after effect of the Peasant War. And particularly around Zurich, you get the coming together of radical individuals who want to push the boundaries of the Reformation beyond what Martin Luther has been talking about, and to enact in a religious way some of the ideas of the peasant war. And that takes place in the early 1520s and begins to spread across Germany.
When you talk about these radical ideas, it almost goes without saying that it wouldn't have a strong appeal to people who have a strong established stake in the current social order, people who belong to the upper class, the ruling class, however it should be defined in this period of time. But beyond that general point, were there specific social groups that we can identify as having been drawn to Anabaptism and these other radical religious tendencies at the time?
I think the best way to answer that is to say that what happened in the Reformation, certainly in the early years, was a throwing open of the gates, if you like, to discussing religious ideas. And everyone in Germany and then across Europe took part in some way in that discussion. Everyone would have had an opinion. And I would argue that the more radical the ideas, the more likely they were to be associated with people from the lower orders, from the peasants, from the sort of urban masses, poorer sections of society. Now, that's not to say that those people necessarily had developed fully rounded theological ideas or programs. What they were attracted to were interpretations of the Bible and the gospel that expressed their frustrations and their desires. This is why, if you look at the peasant war, dozens, perhaps hundreds of demands from groups of rebels talk not just about economic issues, but talk about, for instance, the right to select their own priests in their communities, in their villages and so on. Anabaptism then expresses, and I'll come on to perhaps what it calls for in a moment, but it expresses some of those desires amongst the lower orders. But that's not to say it wasn't attractive to other people in society. Indeed, some of the leading figures of Anabaptism in places like Munster, where committed Anabaptists, came from more wealthy individuals, wealthy sections of the community. And I would argue that's partly because the theological ideas themselves were attractive to them. They perhaps disagreed with what we'd call the Catholic Church over elements of doctrine or interpretations of the Bible. But also those ideas were radical to them because they expressed a frustration at the existing order, the limitations imposed on that order by the sort of current mainstream church. And this was one of the problems for Martin Luther, is that by opening up these debates, he actually opened up a much wider debate in society about how society itself should be organized. And the Anabaptists had two, I would say, principal ideas which were dangerous for the existing order, ideas that were dangerous and disliked by both the old Catholic order and the Lutheran movement itself. One of those, and first and foremost of those, was the idea of a community of goods. Now, this goes back to a particular section of the Bible, Acts verses 2 and 4, which described the behaviour or the organisation of the very early church in Rome, where the followers of Jesus were supposed to have distributed their belongings communally, shared their wealth, and lived in a sort of communal way. Now, this section of the Bible had many interpretations, and even within Anabaptism, right at the start, there were a number of different interpretations of this. But the idea of a community of goods was particularly attractive to the poor and the downtrodden, the people with the least in feudal society and feudal Germany. And that was particularly dangerous to the ruling class because it opened up the idea that wealth should be redistributed from the rich to the poor. The other important idea to the Anabaptists is where they cut their name from, the question of rebaptism. Because the Anabaptists believed that you had to come to God or come to the church through your own self. You had to understand and become a committed Christian. You couldn't have that imposed upon you at birth by baptism into the church. Now, opposition to child baptism, like the Anabaptists did, was something that the established church and the Lutherans opposed vehemently. the Catholic Church considered it something to be thrown out of the church for. It was a massive challenge to their authority and a massive challenge to their theological interpretation of the Bibles. So by the Anabaptists insisting that people had to be rebaptized if they'd already been baptized as a child, or baptized as an adult if they hadn't been, they were saying to the church, we don't accept your interpretation of the Bible, but we also don't accept your church structures that shape people's lives from the very beginning. There were other important ideas that were important to the Anabaptists. Pacifism was an important one, and so on. But all of these ideas, because they were challenging, were also highly illegal. And so one of the great characteristics of the Anabaptist movements, and in fact, I think it would be one of its great strength in the early years, in the 1520s, was the fact that it was often underground, surreptitious, and there were traveling preachers, missionaries, if you like, who moved from village to village, spreading the ideas, debating the ideas, converting people, and rebaptizing them. But they had to do it illegally. And this meant, I think, that the Anabaptists developed very early on both a rejection of the established church, but also a reliance on each other. It was a religious movement, but it was a very self-consciously inward-looking protective movement that looked after each other, was prepared to use secret signs, secret languages, secret code words to communicate. And that gave it enormous resilience, but it also meant that they had a network of people throughout central Germany who could spread their ideas and rely on each other. And this was become very important for the rising that takes place in Munster later on in the 1530s.
One of the books that people might be familiar with talking about this period of history is The Pursuit of the Millennium by Norman Cohn, which was a very influential book looking at a whole series of movements in medieval and early modern Europe, and arguing that they collectively had been animated by millenarian thinking. Now, the essence of that thinking, and you may want to complicate this a little, but as I understand it, the essence of that thinking is the idea that the end of the world, as envisaged in the Christian tradition, in writings like the Book of Revelation, is something that is to be expected imminently. It's not something that will happen at some indefinite point in the future. It's something that will happen within people's lifetimes. How important would you say that kind of millenarian thinking was to the Anabaptists during this period?
I think it was enormously important, certainly at the start. I can't speak for today, for instance, but I think one reason it was important is because it was important to large numbers of people who had engaged in the peasant war in 1524 and 1525. Many of the peasant rebels during that rising saw their activities and their actions as being part of fighting for the imminent arrival of the second coming of Jesus Christ and the rule of the saints. With the defeat of the peasant war, I think many of the radicals who became Anabaptists held on to that central vision and imagined it coming. And Norm Cohn writes in great detail about that. There are two crucial places, however, where this takes hold, one of which is Munster for the Rising. But prior to that, in 1533 in Strasbourg, you see a very large number of Anabaptists coming around the charismatic and eloquent Anabaptist preacher Melchior Hoffmann, who believed in the imminent arrival of the rule of saints. In fact, he gave an exact date and time for it to take place in 1533 in Strasbourg. And it didn't happen, and that is what I would say led directly to the focus on Munster as the next place for the rule of the saints to begin. But certainly that idea of the imminent coming of Christ, a new order arriving, a new radical order that would overturn the old order and would see war and fire and rebellion and so on, was absolutely central to Anabaptism at its time. To skip to the other end of our story, I would argue that the defeat of the Munster Rebellion and some of the repression that takes place after this, the enormous amounts of repression, helped defeat millennial ideas and, if you like, de-radicalised the Anabaptist tradition for the coming years.
What was the geographical spread of Anabaptism, broadly speaking, and why did Munster prove to be a particular centre of the movement?
So Anabaptism as a grouping begins around Zurich in Switzerland, with individuals there and building on a long tradition of radical ideas and a radical rebellion, and also slightly distant from the sort of epicentres, if you like, of the German Peasant War, which meant that individuals there were more protective. But from Zurich, the movement begins to spread quite rapidly through the through central Germany up and towards the borders of France as they are today, and growing in Strasbourg. And one of the things I think that's important to understand about Anabaptism is that it tends to focus at this point in its history around charismatic individuals. We'll see this in Munster, as I mentioned. Hoffmann in Strasbourg became a central figure, a man who had developed his skills as a preacher and a theologian traveling around northern Germany and even elsewhere. But he becomes the focus in Strasbourg. And as I said, he built a movement behind him, a millennial movement of thousands and thousands of individuals of Anabaptism, Anabaptists, that became very quite widespread in the northwest of Europe, into the Netherlands, parts of France, and the west and northwest of Germany. As I said, he predicted the coming of Christ and the reign of the saints to take place in Strasbourg at a point in 1533. That doesn't happen. He doesn't really get to see that because he's been arrested by the authorities and imprisoned in Strasbourg. But he carries on preaching and writing from prison, and he encourages people to look towards Munster in Germany. Now, Munster at the time is a city of about 15,000 people, an important German trading town. But Munster has become the focus because there is another very eloquent radical reformist there called Bernhard Rothmann, who has been preaching and challenging both the established Catholic Church and the Lutherans in the city over all sorts of theological and economic issues, and has begun to pull towards him a whole number of people, people who would consider themselves Anabaptists and people who didn't. But it became known as a town where you could go and engage and be part of these radical ideas. And people began to believe that Munster would be the site of the reign of saints because Strasbourg hadn't been religious enough or Christian enough for that to happen there. And thousands of people start to move towards Munster, quite literally. Hundreds and hundreds of refugees begin to arrive in the city over weeks and months. Rothmann meets many of them, and in February of 1534, he baptizes an adult for the first time and converts to Anabaptism himself. It's still underground, it's still illegal. He's operating in a semi-legal way himself. He's a preacher at a church, but he's also meeting people underground and networking and building links with different groups of people. But the influx of people into Munster happens because they firmly believe it's going to become the site of the second coming. The space for that to happen is quite interesting because it arises out of a conflict between the city's authorities, the church, and the bishop who is responsible for the area around Munster. And the city wins, because the city government is dominated by Lutherans, the city wins the right to become a Lutheran city. And this sort of three-way political row allows space for radical ideas to come out and then for the Anabaptists to start organising and gathering in the city.
What happened next in Munster explains why its name became indelibly associated with Anabaptism, because instead of remaining a force that was in opposition to the established authorities, the Anabaptist radicals in Munster actually took power and set up an administration of their own, which governed the city for a certain period of time. Could you tell us something about how that came about and what was the nature of the radical government that was formed in Munster?
Yeah, so in 1534 into 1535 and 36, Munster becomes the site of the most incredible radical religious rising. I said that Bernard Rothman had converted to Anabaptism in early January of 1534. The following month, there were the scheduled regular city elections for the sort of councilman who would run the city. And by that point, so many Anabaptists had moved to the city that every seat was won by an Anabaptist. It's quite an incredible moment in the in Reformation history, because essentially the city is taken over through elections, but by a mass movement from below. At the same time, there were all sorts of, and there had been all sorts of set piece confrontations between the different forces in the city, the established Catholic Church, the Lutheran movement, and the growing radical reformers and the Anabaptists themselves. And so from February of 1534 onwards, Munster is controlled by Anabaptists, including Bernard Rothman, but also attracting alongside the refugees who were coming to the city and continued to come to the city for the next year, 18 months and so on, individuals from across Germany who were already quite committed to the Anabaptist cause. Two of those figures became quite central to the rebellion, Jan Matthias and Jan van Leeden, and I'll come back to those in a bit. What they did once they had control of the city is the authorities started to force out anybody who wasn't an Anabaptist. They were happy to convert people. Many people did convert and did stay. Other people left, and there were large numbers of refugees from the city, usually people who were unwilling to convert, but also people who thought their economic interests lay better outside a city of growing rebellion. And one of the reasons for that is that the new authorities, the Anabaptist leaders of the city, began to institute some of the ideas that we talked about earlier, that